Welcome to the No More Dead Friends podcast. I am your host, James Evans. We are not affiliated with any 12-step fellowship. If you are interested in meetings, please seek out a local 12-step meeting in your area. If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction and think that you might need treatment, please call 858-790-1937 to see what treatment options are available to you in your area. If you are having a medical emergency, please dial 911. All right, welcome to another episode of The Daily Dose here on the No More Dead Friends podcast. I'm your host, James Evans. Here with me today is Adam G. He's a close family friend of ours and somebody who's struggled with opiate addiction and gotten clean back in 2016 and is very, very into fitness. And he's here to talk about his fitness journey and how that correlates to recovery. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good, man. How is it going in Southern California?
Oh, it is cold, and luckily there's a little break in the rain, but it's California cold, which means it's 60, so it's hoodies and shorts weather, not snow cold.
Dude, yeah, I'm in Arizona, and it's the same thing for me. We get the same temperatures basically up until summer hits, and then we're 20 degrees warmer here.
Yep. As long as it's not monsoon weather in Arizona, though, you're pretty okay.
Oh yeah,
right on. Yeah. Well, so jumping into the fitness stuff, right? I'm curious, how early into your recovery did like your fitness journey begin? Were you somebody who was like me, who put down the spoon and picked up the fork and kind of gained weight in early sobriety?
No,
were you already into fitness once you got clean?
No, it's funny because I was fat. I got up to 400 pounds while I was an addict. And it's always the funniest thing because people are like, how are you fat and an addict? I'm like, well, it's not, I wasn't using meth. I was using fucking morphine.
Yeah.
I wasn't smoking meth or doing coke. I was on morphine and I could feel no pain. So I didn't know when my stomach was full. Yeah. And I would just eat, and whenever I would eat, it was a lot, and it was too much. And I also drank a lot. You know, I'd get home and finish off a 12-pack after a day of work.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of calories going into the body.
For sure.
In a single day.
Yeah, yeah. And so how long had you been clean before you really started focusing in on the gym and really starting to, you know, take this fitness journey?
It was literally the time it took me to detox. So I quit and, you know, I had withdrawal symptoms for 12 to 13 days. And I think on the 14th day or 15th day, it was 2 or 3 days after I had started feeling better, mm-hmm. that my addictive personality was like, okay, we need to fucking do something. We need to do something. And I had an apartment gym. I lived at Waterstone in Marietta.
Okay.
And the little apartment gym there, I just started going in there. I was doing like 30 minutes at a time because that's pretty much all I could handle before I was like, holy shit, I'm going to die. I was 400 pounds.
Yeah.
So that was a lot. And I did that 2 or 3 times a week for a while until I was down. I think I had lost about 50 pounds before I could even step on a scale and it would register my weight.
Yeah.
So I did that 2 or 3 days a week, you know, just tried to start moving, started riding a bicycle. And then I was like, okay, I'm starting to take this seriously. Now I'm about to go to like an actual gym. I had a Fitness 19 membership, so I started doing that probably 2 or 3 months in, and then it kicked up to 5 days a week, and then I found powerlifting and started doing that. Messed myself up with powerlifting, trying to go too heavy, too quick, and switched it over to bodybuilding style training where it's like more reps and making lighter weights hard instead of heavy weights easy.
Yeah.
You know, just switching it up a little bit. And then, you know, after 3 years, I had gotten down to 205 pounds.
That's awesome. So I haven't been 205 pounds since I was probably in the seventh or eighth grade.
Yeah, I think that was the last time I was 205 was probably eighth or ninth grade as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I got clean, you know, I've always been a bigger dude too, but, you know, I was doing a lot of the stimulants. So when I got clean, I felt like I was underweight, but I was at like 245, right? And so that's typically, you know, for me, that's like peak physique, right? And, you know, I did really well with the fitness. For me in early recovery, you know, fitness was super, super important. You know, while I was in the halfway house, I had my buddy Colin, who is was my gym partner for a long time. And then, you know, he left the halfway house and there was this new dude, Aaron. And so for me, it was like, it was super, super important for me to have like my routine. Right. And I firmly believe like for us in recovery, you know, routine, being routine oriented and having structure is super, super important. So I'm curious, like for you today, like how important is your routine? And how do you make your routine work? I don't know if you still do meetings that coming up on 8 years, like, or what does your schedule look like with the gym and work and meetings, and how do you all fit that together?
Well, I've always tried to prioritize it at least 30 minutes a day. You don't need to be in the gym for 3 hours a day. Honestly, if you're in the gym for 3 hours, you're either talking too much or you're not training hard enough. You know, 30 to 45 minutes now with, you know, I would say I'm intermediate at lifting. I'm pretty proficient in it. And 45 minutes is enough.
Yeah.
Is enough for me. So I can always fit it into my day. 45 minutes, whether I'm at the gym or I just started riding bikes again. So I bought a mountain bike. I'm doing that. I never went to meetings. I quit on my own. The mind over matter thing. You know, I've never had to fit meetings in, but, you know, I work, I go to the gym, and then I come home, I pick my kid up from school, try to get the quality time there. You know, once you start doing it, and, you know, what is it, 28 days to form a habit?
Yep.
After that time, it's just becomes a habit. You just want to be doing things, especially when you're not feeling like shit or you're nodding out. You actually have energy to do things.
For sure. Well, and that's super awesome. So I didn't know that you didn't get clean like in the rooms and stuff like that, right? And so it's always important for me to at least show people that there's these avenues and these paths, right? Like I know for me, right? Like I get down in the rooms. So like that's my home and I don't feel the need to like leave the rooms now that I've been clean for a long time. Like it's just my home, right? But there's so many people I see who go to the rooms and they try and do the deal. And I don't know if they are saying they are and they aren't, but for whatever reason, it's not working, right? And I have one friend who he got sober. After a couple years, he got like way into his church and then really just like he basically was becoming a pastor. And you know, that was his route and he stepped away from meetings when that was his path, you know? And so it's cool to see, right? Like the boxes of what meetings give you, you have in your life, right? Like you can check those boxes. Like it gives you the structure. It gives you something that you're leaving your house, you're participating in, you're getting off your ass, you're putting in action, and you're building self-worth and you're doing all these things that, you know, at a basic form, like when we show up and, you know, we got half a brain cell left and we don't really even know how to like, you know, like in early recovery, you know, so many of us go out to get food or coffee so much because we don't know how to like go do things and do them sober. So it's like, guess I'll eat, you know?
Yeah.
Guess we'll go to Denny's after the meeting. And so it's great to see, to have someone on that has a story that is, you know, it's different, right? You found a different route. I always try and convey that message, right? You don't have to do things the way I do things. You don't have to come to 12-step meetings. They're there for you if you need them, but there are other routes. And I just always encourage people to find what works for them because that's the most important.
That is the most, and you know, the gym is like therapy. It's a very underutilized form of therapy. You know, when you're pushing yourself to do something and the results come slow, Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that you can just like pick up a weight and you'll be jacked tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that's just like you look forward to the next week and the next week's progress and next week's progress, next month's progress. And you're just like putting in the time and you're, you know, in these moments, you're finding out a lot about yourself. I've always heard this phrase, if you want to learn something new, pick up a book. If you want to learn something about yourself, pick up something heavy. And it's been such a true saying because it's taught me so much about, you know, even in my personal life, you know, how hard I can push myself, how hard I can work. You know, I was a mediocre, because I'm a machinist. I was a mediocre machinist before I started training and, you know, figuring things out about myself. But after seeing how far I can push myself, how much I actually can, you know, how driven I am to learn new things, it has transferred over into my work life and my real life. You know, you push really hard in the gym and you push really hard for your relationships and you work really hard for, you know, your kids and your job. And, you know, it's helped in avenues more than people think. It just helps in every avenue of your life.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like anything where you build a skill and you grow in this area. In recovery, we have the 12th step, which is to take those principles and put them in all of your affairs, right? And so I apply these principles in this area of my life. And so what's going to happen to me when I apply it over here or I apply it over there, right? Those things in my life, in those areas of my life, they start getting better. So I guess maybe you kind of just answered this one. This was a question I had here for you. Was there any important lessons that you learned about yourself on your fitness journey that helped you like solidify your position in recovery from drugs and alcohol? Like how much of your success in recovery do you correlate to your success in the gym?
I would say it has everything to do with that because, you know, most addicts, they trade one addiction for another. Mm-hmm. But this route, I traded my drug addiction for a fitness addiction. And I'm glad I latched on to this instead of, well, I'm not doing opiates. Well, maybe I'll just start drinking more.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm just in my feels right now because I can't imagine, you know, it's seeing the route that I was going. It's crazy because one of the thoughts that I had before quitting, like a couple weeks before quitting, I was just like, you know, I've always heard that heroin's cheaper than all of these fucking pills.
Mm-hmm.
How much is heroin compared to what I'm paying for pills? And it's just a crazy thought because I've seen so many people die from addiction and I lost my father a couple of years ago from addiction, and my daughter's mother has been absent since she was 5 because she's a heroin addict. And yeah, it's just
the whole point of the podcast, man, or at least the inspiration for putting it together is the No More Dead Friends podcast. Like,
yeah,
you know, I've had so many friends and loved ones that have passed away from before I got clean, after I got clean, people that I knew from before I entered the rooms and so many people that I've known in the rooms, bunch of dudes that I was in the halfway house, like the only two dudes that I'm aware of that are three dudes that I'm aware of, right, that are still clean and sober to this day out of the halfway house I came from was me and then my buddy Patrick, who, you know, he's somebody who stepped away and got like way into yoga. But he's still clean and sober today. And then this homeless dude, Todd, dude, I love Todd. He's actually out here working. He got a union job. This is when we were out in Colorado and now he's out here on some prevailing wage job in Huntington Beach. And he's out here for the next few months. I'm supposed to go have dinner with him soon. And this was a homeless dude that just moved into, you know, in his 50s, moved into the halfway house because it was winter and he wanted to like catch a place to shower real quick for a few days and before getting kicked out. And he was signing his meeting sheet with pencil all himself. And, you know, he was a dude that just like something clicked and he decided to stay and he decided to do it. And then I was the manager and he became my assistant manager. And then when I left, he became the manager and he's the only dude there that the owner of the house has ever given a union job to, because the owner, Kevin, was a union rep. So Todd's a freaking miracle, dude. I mean, he crawled out of the creek in Colorado Springs and has been sober ever since, you know? And so, you know, not a lot of people made it out from where I came from. And a lot of those dudes died. A lot of them, you know, went to prison or jail for a long period of time. But a bunch of dudes died. I mean, my one buddy was the whole reason why I even moved into that house. He had me cracking up and laughing after I did a tour there, and I was like, screw it, I don't have any friends in Colorado, so I'll live with you. And the dude who was my bunk mate when I first got in there, you know, he was below me in on the bottom bunk. I was on the top bunk, and I was selling security systems, and he was selling these like these courses for kids to learn stuff for school and how to read and stuff. And so every day I'd get up and I'd be out there trying to make them housewives feel comfortable with the security system. And he'd be out here making sure little Timmy knows how to read. And we'd both go to our sales jobs, you know, and it's like so many people along the way pass away. And so many people with just like great energy, great human beings. And, you know, the whole disease of addiction, man, it's a killer and it doesn't discriminate. And so, it's super, super important for me to be doing this. And I'm glad I get to connect with someone like you. You know, I know you grew up with my cousin, and, you know, the nothing would have brought us together like this if it wasn't for Annette sharing the post and you just saying, hey, I got a story. So, this will be the last question. What advice would you give for those of us who have gained weight in sobriety? Like for me, you know, fitness was important in the beginning, and then I got in a relationship and got married and COVID, and I'll do good for 90 days and then I'll fall off for 90 days and then I'll do good for a couple of months and that back and forth. So what advice would you give for those of us who've gained weight in sobriety, and have been struggling to kind of like keep a year round routine, of eating healthy and exercise?
Dude, you went through withdrawal, right?
Yep.
You felt that pain. That pain is nothing compared to staying consistent, you know, with exercise. Whether it just be a walk around the neighborhood, the most underutilized form of exercise is walking. You know, just to make little habits, those little habits, you know, just walking, you know, whether you a brisk walk with your wife around the block, make sure it's 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to give people the motivation. You know what I mean? Cause it's fleeting.
Yeah.
I could hype you up. I could hype you the fuck up and you could go hit the gym right now, but what's to keep you going tomorrow?
Yep.
You know, consistency beats motivation every time. And it's just like, you know, if you don't feel like it, you gave the gym 60% for 20, 30 minutes, you showed up, and that's going to continue you on the path. It's going to keep you going. You know, going in on days where you're just like, fuck, man, work was rough. And once you get moving, you know, you get warmed up and you do like your first set, the endorphins are going to start kicking in and you're going to just be like, oh shit, yeah, this is why I kept going. This is why I keep going. Mm-hmm. Because of this feeling.
Yeah. And it's just like recovery, man. You know, hearing you say it like that, it's no different, right? It's, I mean, even on a week that I've done nothing for my recovery, or at least I feel like I've done nothing for my recovery, I've probably hit two meetings. I've probably done a podcast. I've talked to my sponsor. You know, I work in treatment, so I'm surrounded by recovery. And even if I feel like, you know, my participation has dipped down, it's like, hey, you know, if it has to do with the gym, like, you know, I got to at least say I showed up and I walked or I did this or I lifted something or, you know, I did something. Right. And I know those days, right. The hardest day or the hardest part of going to the gym sometimes is putting on the shoes and grabbing the keys and getting out the door. Right.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part. Once you're there and you get going, you feel better. And I always feel better, which is why, you know, I'm always trying. It's just life happens and I get distracted.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the most important thing.
Dude, I still have weeks where I haven't gone this week. I went on Sunday or I think I went on Saturday, but I haven't gone to the gym at all this week. I've ridden my mountain bike around the neighborhood, but yeah. I haven't like gone in because I'm putting in like crazy overtime. And I'm just like, all right, at least I'm going to get my body moving and just ride the mountain bike, get those endorphins, go on a 6 mile ride. It's not a lot, but I'm a large human. I'm 6 foot 250. So getting a bike moving it can be pretty rough, but you know, the pain that you feel is nothing compared to withdrawal.
Yeah.
You know, just that hard getting yourself moving to go to the gym is fucking nothing compared to the tiredness you feel to go exercise or move your body. You know what I mean? So it's like,
sure.
we often forget the shit that we went through coming off of the drugs. Like I can remember, I just got chills. I got chills thinking about the dry heaving, the fucking sweating, nonstop sweating, just puking. But I was maintaining my work life because my job didn't know that I was fucked up. So when I quit, I was like, I quit cold turkey like an idiot. So I was still going to work and just like trying to work, and just standing up was unbearable. And I keep those things going in my head when I'm like, I'm too tired to go to the gym. I'm like, dude, this is fucking nothing. This is 20 or 30 minutes. That was 12 days of pure misery. This 20 or 30 minutes is nothing.
Yeah. Well, it's remarkable that you're able to keep that experience at the forefront of your mind. I mean, a lot of times, you know, we talk about the fact that a lot for addicts and alcoholics, we don't have the ability to remember the pain and the suffering of the night before. You know?
Yeah.
So that I think it's always super important for us to remember where we come from.
Yeah. And
the experience we had, because it's obviously working in your life. Well, yeah, this was a great episode. I really appreciate your time coming on here. It was really, really cool to connect with you and hear your fitness journey. And I hope this helps some people when they get a chance to tune in and listen.
Yeah, that'd be great, dude. If it helps one person, that it's just, you don't realize how freeing it is, because I feel like we got out just in time before fentanyl hit the streets.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It was literally what I feel like 2017, we started hearing about it.
Yep.
It was shortly after I quit where I was like, holy shit, this shit's rolling around.
Yep. We dropped a huge bullet there.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Well, I'm going to keep doing my deal, keep staying sober, and I hope you do the same, man. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, you too, dude. Keep in touch. Text me whenever.
All right, will do, for sure. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the No More Dead Friends podcast. I am your host, James Evans. We are not affiliated with any 12-step fellowship. If you are interested in meetings, please seek out a local 12-step meeting in your area. If you are a loved one, is struggling with addiction, and think that you might need treatment, please call 858-790-1937 to see what treatment options are available to you in your area. If you are having a medical emergency, please dial 911. For information about our clothing line, please go to nomoredeadfriends.etsy.com. The No More Dead Friends podcast is made for educational, promotional, and entertainment purposes. It is essential to understand that the topics discussed in this podcast are based on general knowledge and are not to be considered as professional treatment advice. Please consult with qualified medical professionals before making any decisions or taking any actions based on the information in this podcast.